It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thanks for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. We're broadcasting here on Signal Hill in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we are looking at overcast skies, but they insist we're going to see partly sunny skies at some point today. 56 degrees out there, looking for a high of 62. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak has survived another tsunami. Local doctors talk to our local newsmen about the new Delta variant of COVID-19. And a poll-raising project to honor veterans in Hoonah. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Joe Biden is expected to announce that civilian federal employees will need to verify they are vaccinated and, if not, wear masks and submit to regular COVID testing. NPR's Aisha Roscoe reports that Biden is taking these steps as cases of coronavirus surge across the United States.
Coronavirus cases are going up as the highly transmissible Delta variant spreads and certain parts of the country fall behind in vaccinations. The White House is not calling the new requirements for federal employees a mandate, but it does impose additional requirements on workers who, for whatever reason, choose not to get vaccinated. Federal employees will need to confirm that they are vaccinated, or else they will need to have regular testing and wear a mask at all times. The federal government is the nation's largest employer, and it could become a model for the private sector to follow. Aisha Roscoe, NPR News.
As the U.S. examines the possibility of booster shots for people who are immune compromised, the Israeli government is recommending a third shot of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine for people 60 years and older. Israel's the first country to widely administer a third shot. Officials there cite studies that suggest the vaccine's effectiveness might wear off over time, especially concerning because of the Delta variant of the virus that's more aggressive than its predecessors. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is pushing a two-track approach on infrastructure. One has bipartisan backing. A second, far bigger spending package faces GOP resistance. Today, Schumer credits the Biden administration with accomplishing a lot.
A massive investment in public infrastructure will create tens of thousands of good-paying jobs. That's just what the doctor ordered.
Schumer says his goal is for both measures to be approved before the August recess. Australia is sending a heavy air tanker plane to help battle the out-of-control wildfires burning from Montana to California. Air resources are in short supply in this country, and with U.S. resources nearly tapped out, NPR's Kirk Sigler reports the international aid is welcome.
At times, the dense smoke has made it difficult for fire managers even to fly spotter planes over the flames as they try to figure out how to protect homes, power lines, and other critical infrastructure. The two biggest areas of concern right now continue to be in Northern California and Southern Oregon, where fires have blackened hundreds of thousands of acres, yet few actual homes so far. Fire managers warn that could change quickly if the wind shifts. Some parts of the West have gotten a reprieve from weeks of dense smoke and triple-digit temperatures lately. A storm system forecast for the Northwest could bring more showers this weekend, but also the threat of more lightning strikes and ignitions. Kirk Sigler, NPR News, Boise.
The Dow closes up 153 points. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Kodiak is now all clear following last night's earthquake and tsunami warning. The tsunami warning was spurred by a magnitude 8.2 earthquake that occurred at 10:16 p.m. last night, 75 miles southeast of Chignik at a depth of 20 miles. According to state seismologist Michael West, it was the largest earthquake in the Alaska region since 1965. At the end, it was a welcome anticlimax. The tsunami was just a half a foot tall when it arrived in Kodiak at 12:27 a.m. this morning. Maggie Wall spoke to people on the street after the earthquake. Here's what they had to say.
I was in a hotel. It was rocking. I thought the walls were going to fall. They told us to get out. And now we're, I don't know what we're waiting for now. Yeah. We're waiting for a tsunami, I guess, and hope we survive this and came for work. Now, first time going through all this.
Yeah, it's our very first time. We're not used to this shit. We're from California. We're not used to this.
We're from Sacramento, California, pretty much. And I've been in a few earthquakes in my day, but never on an island. And I'm taking it seriously. So, I mean, that's real. That could happen. It was pretty good, and it was, what, 60 miles offshore? A little nervous, but excited. But other than that, just being cautious.
I thought I was drunk at first. I did. I actually have a little bit of a sinus headache, and so I took some medication. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm having a medical issue. That was the earthquake. And then when Aaron got the notification, we just grabbed our stuff as quickly as we could and left.
Where do you live?
We are actually visiting it. We used to live here. Yeah, so we came just from downtown, ran up the hill.
I was quite nervous. I was like, Mom, hurry up, because she was like taking her mask off and like, where's my head? It's like, so I grabbed her fedora and stuff. Yeah, I was nervous.
Hi, my name's Spencer Abbey. I'm a graduate researcher, Department of History, University of Oregon, specializing in earthquake and tsunami history of the North Pacific. And I happen to be in town researching at the Kodiak History Museum this week, and this just happened to be a time to be here to learn a little bit more about this community and its tsunami preparedness. And I obviously would encourage everybody to learn a little bit more about the community's preparedness plan. It's updated fairly regularly, and it's important to know about.
On Wednesday's episode of The Lowdown here on KMXT, Drs. Evan Jones and Shauna Theobald discuss the Delta variant of COVID-19 and its ever-increasing presence worldwide, and the vaccines seen as key to combating it. The Kodiak Island borough is only at 56% of the total population having more than one dose of COVID-19 vaccine, according to the state vaccine portal. The EOC and health service providers around the island have worked tirelessly to move the needle in the last few months with limited success. But now, with a new wave of cases likely powered by the Delta variant COVID strain, they asked the doctors what arguments they were having success with. Dr. Jones was quick to point out that the disease is indeed worse than the cure.
One or two of my visits every week is somebody who had the virus 6 months ago and still is fighting it to this day. Mm. How many visits have I had from bad vaccine outcomes? Zero. None. Not one single follow-up. And that
Jones also spoke in defense of those resistant to not getting the vaccine.
Don't treat people like they're stupid. Don't say these guys are idiots for not getting vaccinated. They're not. A lot of them are just a little bit scared. A lot of them are misinformed. And part of being a friend is informing them and comforting them.
Dr. Theobald emphasized the unique privilege it is to have such easy access to the COVID vaccine.
And the lower the vaccination rates, the poorer the outcomes. And I think we're just going to continue to see that pattern. And it is sad to me that we have so much vaccine surplus in the United States and wealthy countries while the globe is desperate to get some of that vaccine into their population. And I just wish there was a way to evenly spread it among everyone, especially and get the people that really need it right away.
The doctors agreed that COVID-19 is back in Kodiak and reiterated their plea that those 12 and older get the vaccine. If you're interested and not already vaccinated, please contact one of the local clinics or your physician. A two-year project aimed at honoring Alaska's veterans is finally complete. KTOO's Bridget Dowd reports on an emotional weekend in Hūnō where service members and their families gathered to celebrate.
Oh, say, can you see?
A few hundred people sat for 5 hours in the rain on Saturday,
They came to witness the raising of a totem pole honoring the community's servicemen and women. There are a lot of veterans in Hoonah. At least 10% of the population has served in the military, one of the highest numbers per capita in the country. Even before Alaska was a state, many Alaskan natives stepped up to fight for the United States.
All you men and women that have stepped forward, we have tried to honor you the best we could with our hands and our tools.
That's local artist Gordon Greenwald, who designed and carved the totem pole. He's not a veteran himself, but he wanted to pay tribute to those who've served.
Kunishchish, may our hands do you justice. Thank you.
The base of the pole honors the fallen soldier, moving upward carvings of combat boots from Operation Desert Storm, a Vietnam-era M16 rifle, and a World War II helmet. Toward the middle are carved dog tags representing each branch of the service, including the Alaska Territorial Guard, and a Tlingit warrior dressed in armor.
And on the top are the eagle and raven. Now you notice that the eagle and raven are turned slightly back to back. It's not the cold shoulder, but all you military veterans know I've got your back, buddy.
Veteran commanders traveled from Sitka, Juneau, and Cake to join those from Hoonah. William, or Ozzie, Sheikley, was the MC.
I'm the commander for Juneau Vets, so they asked me to MC over here since I've been doing it for a while.
He says it was nice for everyone to be together again after a year of putting the celebration on hold.
The carvers finished last summer, but we weren't ready to put because of the COVID. We wanted to put up when it's mostly all clear.
When there was a break in the ceremony for lunch, Sheikley caught up with Hoonah Veterans Commander James Lindoff Jr.
We're up with Wasilla, 98. They got a wall. I told my cousin, he passed on. I told him, we'll get ours, we'll get our own, which we are.
Lindoff was in Vietnam in 1967 and 68. He joked with me as it started to drizzle again.
Here comes rain. You know how to do the rain dance?
I don't.
No? What's your name again?
Bridget.
I gotta lose my curls now.
And that rain didn't hinder anyone's ability to appreciate the weight and joy of the occasion. The project is a collaboration between the City of Hoonah, the Hoonah Heritage Foundation, the Hoonah Veterans Committee, and Hoonah Clan representatives. The land was donated by Korean War veteran Stanley, or Steamy, Thompson, who passed away in April. His wife, Judy Thompson, spoke on his behalf.
Steamy was born and raised in Hoonah, and he was very proud to be from Hoonah. He was very proud to be of his heritage. He was very proud of his family, and he was very proud to be a veteran. And so that's why he wanted to dedicate this land to the Hoonah Heritage Foundation.
Hoonah Heritage Foundation Executive Director Amelia Wilson says the totem pole is just the first piece of what will eventually be Hoonah Veterans Memorial Park.
There will be a memorial wall honoring those Hoonah veterans who have passed on, and that'll be behind the totem pole. And then there'll be some concrete work in the shape of a tanah, which is like a copper shield, and then it'll have some brass inlays, and then we'll have some native plants that will be used for landscaping around it to kind of enclose the space in a natural way.
Wilson said it felt good to be able to gather for something positive, because the few times they'd been able to recently were for funerals or the passing of loved ones.
I think in our community, and most other communities too, if you haven't served yourself, somebody in your family or in your social network has served. And so it's really something that can unite us, and it really showed at the event.
The land of the free,
reporting in Hoonah,
home of the brave.
I'm Bridget Dowd.
The State Health Department is now advising all Alaskans in much of the state, even those who are fully vaccinated against COVID-19, to consider masking up again indoors. Alaska Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink says the spike of highly contagious Delta variant has triggered the new recommendation, which echoes federal guidelines issued on Tuesday for coronavirus hotspots.
With the current surge and with how rapidly this virus is spreading, as it's highly contagious, we're trying to use every measure we can to slow this virus down to protect as many lives as possible.
The Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says everyone in communities with substantial or high virus transmission should mask indoors. According to the agency's map, nearly all of Alaska falls into one of those two categories, including Anchorage, the Mat-Su, the Kenai Peninsula, Fairbanks, and Juneau. The CDC's advice for unvaccinated people remains unchanged. Always wear a face mask in public indoor spaces. Leaders of Alaska's largest hospitals say a steep rise in COVID-19 hospitalizations is straining a healthcare system that's already struggling with staffing shortages and a burned-out workforce. In a news conference on Tuesday, executives said that the spike in hospitalizations is forcing them to reinstate some of the emergency measures taken earlier in the pandemic before the rollout of the vaccines. At Alaska Native Medical Center in Anchorage, Dr. Bob Anders says that includes limiting surgeries and restarting visitor restrictions.
This morning, we are closing off one of our wings again, just like in the fall, to make it a COVID unit.
Anders and other hospital executives pleaded with Alaskans to get vaccinated during the news conference organized by the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. That group's CEO, Jared Kozin, says many Alaska hospitals, especially in Anchorage, are at or near capacity. He says COVID hospitalizations have reached December levels, and the increase comes as hospitals are already dealing with the usual summer uptick in patients, plus hiring challenges.
At this rate, we are tracking towards a significant care event. And on the downside here, the healthcare system is a far more fragile state than it was before. We have less room, we have less staff, and we have a burned out workforce. On the upside, we have an effective tool in play, and that's the vaccine.
But public health officials have been struggling for weeks to boost Alaska's stalling vaccination rates. The state's prior COVID mandates are now expired or reduced to recommendations, leaving behind a patchy local response that varies widely by community and by region. Kozin says Alaska hospitals are urging local leaders to pay attention to the latest wave of cases.
It's going to be up to policymakers to make informed decisions. We're giving you the information. This is extremely serious.
Dan Winkleman, head of the Bethel-based Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, says if Anchorage hospitals become overwhelmed, it creates big challenges for rural hospitals that would normally send their sickest patients to the city. Winkleman says this point in the pandemic feels familiar.
It's deja vu all over again, unfortunately. We're kind of starting off like it was last fall, at least out here in the YK Delta, and that's very concerning.
Like elsewhere in the country, Alaskans hospitalized with the coronavirus now are generally the unvaccinated, sicker and younger between the ages of 30 and 55. A state lawyer outed as having posted racist and anti-Semitic comments on Twitter no longer works for the Alaska Department of Law. That's according to a written statement from Attorney General Treg Taylor, which does not say whether the former assistant attorney Matthias Sikot resigned or was fired. He had worked for the state since 2012. A week ago, the Guardian newspaper reported that anti-fascist researchers had identified Sikot as the author of a series of Twitter posts written under a pseudonym that contained extreme views on race, religion, and criminal justice. According to the story, Sikot wrote about vigilante violence against left-wing groups, execution of people performing gender reassignment surgery, and jailing Black Lives Matter protesters. The Guardian also reported Sikot was a supporter of the Mormon-derived extremist group. The Deseret Nationalists, some of whom advocate for a secessionist Mormon state, including large parts of Nevada, Utah, and Arizona. Attorney General Taylor, who leads the Department of Law, said in a statement about Sikot, quote, "We respect and value different points of view, backgrounds, cultures, and opinions, and our employees strive to do the same in the workplace. End quote. Citing confidentiality rules about personnel matters, a spokeswoman for the law department declined to comment further on an internal investigation into the allegations against Chicot.
This is Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Fisher or fishermen? What do they prefer? I'll tell you more after this.
Did you know that eating wild and sustainable Alaska seafood can boost your immune system? Learn more about Alaska seafood's many proven nutritional benefits at wildalaskaseafood.com.
Our language has evolved to try and become more gender neutral and politically correct. For example, policeman to police officer, fireman to firefighter, and more recently, fisherman to fisher. Federal and state documents and media reports all use the word fishers frequently today. Fish Radio asked Kodiak men and women who fish for a living how they feel about the more gender-neutral name change.
I enjoy the term fisherman. I'd much rather be called a fisherman than be called a fisherwoman. It separates me as crew. I want to be treated like a crew member.
As a woman, I've always considered myself a fisherman. My dad's taught me how to fish, and I feel like it is important to many families, especially father-daughter relationship. I think it should stay the way it is.
Historically, the word man is actually generic for men and women. It defines a human being, or the family of man. Do fishing people find fisher man offensive?
I think we put too much weight on the gender bias thing, and it shouldn't be there. Accept people for who they are. Why do we have to change it because somebody's offended?
It's been used for hundreds of years. Whether you're a fisher guy or you're a fisher woman, it's always been used as fisherman. It's obviously, like I said, it has to be of a woman who is not tied into the fisheries. It's got to be.
A fisherman's a fisherman. That's just the term. This gender neutral has gone too far.
I'm offended to change.
Some had suggestions for more acceptable gender terms.
I think fisherman, you eliminate the women, but fisher is not it.
If fisherman has got to go, fisher person would be just fine. And if a woman wants to be called fisher lady, I would think that would be acceptable as well.
Fisherman is a fisherman is a fisherman and will always be a fisherman. Whether it's female, male, boy, child, man, woman, it doesn't really matter.
Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, who salutes and says thanks to the men and women fishing across Alaska for their hard work and dedication. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 25, date issued July 25th at 10 a.m. There will be a 96-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Tuesday, July 27th, until 9 p.m. Saturday, July 31st in the following areas. In the Outer Iqaluk and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, and the Cape Alitak, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District. There will be an 81-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Wednesday, July 28th, until 9 p.m. Saturday, July 31st in the following areas. In the Northwest Kodiak District, except for the Inner Uganic Bay section, will remain closed, and the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Wednesday, July 28th, until 9 p.m. Friday, July 30th, in the following areas. In the Raspberry Strait, northwest of Afognak, Shuyak Island, Paul's Bay, Paranosa Bay, northeast of Afognak, Duck Bay, and southeast of Afognak sections of the Afognak District. The Humpy Dead Man section of the Alitak District, the northeast Kodiak District, except for the Buskin River section, remains closed, the eastside Kodiak District, and the mainland district, except for the inner Kukak Bay section, will remain closed. The seaward zones of the Alinchak Bay, Katmai, Dakovac Bay, Outer Kukak Bay, Hollow Bay, and Big River sections of the mainland district, and the seaward zones of the northwest Afognak and Shuyak Island sections of the Afognak district remain closed to commercial salmon fishing. As previously announced, the Outer Katoy Bay section of the Afognak district will open to commercial salmon fishing at noon Saturday, July 25th, and remain open until further notice. The following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the Iqaluk Bay section of the Afognak District, and the Spiriton Bay Special Harvest Area, also known as Telrod Cove. Until further notice, in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak districts, south of a latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart, detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations, and statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 29th day of July, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 5:59. It will set again at 10:31, giving us 16 hours and 33 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 7 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this day was 40, set in 71, and our record high was 82, set in 29. It's presently 57 degrees, rather pleasant outside. They're still calling for partly sunny skies, but it has been just sort of overcast all day, and they're calling for a high near 62 today. Southeast wind to 5. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 52, and for tomorrow, a 10% chance of rain after 4 p.m., which I guess means it'll be nice until 4 p.m. Cloudy skies overnight on Friday, too, with a 30% chance of rain after 7 p.m. and a low of 52 on Friday. Looking at our tides, we just had a low tide here on the east side at 12:19 p.m. That was a 0.4-foot tide. Our next high tide will be at 6:53 p.m. and be 7.6 feet, followed by a low tide at 12:54 a.m. of 1.9 feet, and our high tide for tomorrow morning will be at 6:50 a.m. and be 6.5 feet. We're on the west side, and this is Larsen Bay. You will have a low tide at 12:51 this afternoon of 1 foot, followed by a high tide at 7:14 p.m. of 12.5 feet. Your low tide for the middle of the night will be at 1:32 a.m. and be 3 feet. And your high tide for the west side tomorrow morning will be at 7:18 a.m. and be 10.6 feet in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. Southwest 20 right now, seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, look for southwest 15, seas to 3 feet. We have a small craft advisory through tonight in the Shelikof. For today, southwest 25, seas to 7 feet. For tomorrow, southwest 20, seas coming down to 6 feet. For inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays, Chiniak Bay, variable winds less than 10 right now, seas to 3 feet with patchy fog. For tomorrow, southwest 10 becoming south 15 tomorrow afternoon, seas to 2 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, variable wind less than 10 right now, seas to 3 feet with patchy fog. For tomorrow, variable less than 10, seas to 3 feet. Nominating petitions for 1 2-year city mayor seat and 2 3-year city council seats are available in the city clerk's office right now. For additional information, call the clerk at 486-8636. And even though the Kodiak National Wildlife Visitor Center is remaining closed, they are offering something to the public every Wednesday through September. They are hosting an outdoor-only program in Sargent Park right across the street from the Kodiak National Wildlife Visitor Center. Between the hours of 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. every Wednesday through September, they're having Salmon Camp Day. Every day you can stop by for this outdoor, interactive, and self-led program on Kodiak, Alaska's natural world. This next program, they're teaming up with CANA, Alaska Sea Grant, Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District on a program on invasive species. The event is open to all ages. If you'd like more information, call 487-0283.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.